And so we, Lighthouse Church, we pastor for over 10 years now, and we've got a location in Dublin that we launched 6 weeks ago, and then our main location is in a city called Navan. Don't bother trying to find it in Google Maps. If you type Navan in Google Maps, it will say it doesn't know either, so don't feel bad about that. This is my wonderful family, my wife Ludmila. This is why I got married at 18, as you can see. In fact, I actually tried to get married at 17. My mother wouldn't sign the release papers, so I would have been married at 17 if I had my way. She was 7, so that's why that happened. And no, I'm joking. She's actually older than me, so she's a cradle snatcher. And yes, my lovely wife. And even 3 boys, as Pastor Jason said. Joshua, who's just over 10. Davi, who's on my shoulders. And Isaiah, the destroying angel. He's a destroying angel. He's been sent by God to destroy everything. And trying to take a photograph. We're trying to act like we're a good family. And that we're normal, and clearly we're not. I think this was number 17 of 25. This is the best one I have, so that's about as good as it gets. And I really actually miss them, and look forward to seeing them this week. But our story is a little bit crazy. I got saved when I was 16. My wife actually led me to Jesus, which we'll hear about later on. And then I got married at 18. Actually, I think we got pregnant at 19. Then I took over the church as senior pastor at 20. So if you're 20 and don't have a church, or a spouse, or a child, what are you waiting for? Man, time's ticking. Come on, we need to get busy. We're about the Father's business, amen? But and of course, our church sends us love and its greetings also. We love South Africa, actually. The Irish love South Africa. And we've got many, many, in our church in particular, we have many, many South Africans from all over the nation. It's been an absolute joy to actually come for the first time and experience your country and the beautiful diversity of what makes you such an amazing people. And the city of Cape Town. What an amazing city you guys live in. You're so blessed. The sun shines here. I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, I wanted to take a photo of your prayer request and say, this is ridiculous. These people actually pray for rain. I mean, like we have so much rain. We'll send you rain. I mean, we'll package it. We'll send it all. If we could swap, we would take a desert any day. I mean, honestly, instead of the rain, because it rains so much. But it's been so great just to see your nation and Pastor Jason and Susan. We just love you guys. And I think this church is an amazing church. I think God's got an amazing plan and purpose for you guys. And so it's really great to be here today and just to be able to invest and do a small bit to sow into God's extraordinary plan for this church. And I want to say that whenever you find a church that offers coffee and brownies afterwards, you need to be loyal to that church. This church is going places, honestly. Chocolates, or chocolate brownies and coffee. Anyway, so here's what I want to do today. I want to talk to you, as I was praying during the week, about what the Lord would have me talk about or share or bring to you guys. I really felt the Lord put in my heart future. The sense of which you guys have an extraordinary future ahead of you. And here's one thing I know about all of you without really knowing any of you, and that is this. We all share one thing in common, and that we have a future. As long as there's breath in our lungs and the Lord graces us with the strength and the vitality of life, then we have a tomorrow. Which should be good news to you, because no matter how difficult or horrible yesterday was, or how challenging today is, as long as we have a tomorrow, there's always the chance and the possibility of tomorrow being great. And so I want to talk to you about this morning is about forging a future by faith. I want to talk about the idea that you have an incredible future, and part of the reason why God has saved you and called you and redeemed you is because he has a plan and purpose for your future. But that future won't just happen to you. That future won't just fall in your lap. We got to do some things. We got to work with God in order to secure that future and make it a reality. Are you with me? Yeah. So it gets kicked off. Let me just start off with this. Do you guys have this game? We play a game in Ireland, especially when you're kids, called hide and go seek. You play that here. Yeah. This is interesting because everywhere I go in the world, everyone plays hide and go seek. Question. When the person counts, right? How long does he or she count for? 10 seconds. Oof. 10. 30 seconds. 60 seconds. Any other takers? 60 is quite generous. I mean, this guy, 10. I'm not playing with that guy. I mean, he looks fast. He's going to catch me every time. I actually asked this question once a while back in another country, and they said that they counted for like 90 seconds. I mean, I could be in another continent in 90 seconds. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to be really bad at that game. Anyway, but 10 seconds is pretty cool. What's fascinating is that you know, how the game works, in case you don't know and have never played hide and go seek, is, you know, you're in a group, your friends, you nominate one person, that person goes and, you know, turns their back and, you know, no peeking, and they count. And while the person counts, everyone hides. And then when the person reaches the end of the countdown, they turn around and they say something, don't they? What do they say here? Here I come. I mean, this is amazing. Everywhere in the world, ready or not, here I come. I'm going to find you. What's really interesting is our future is a lot like playing hide and go seek, because ready or not, whether we want it, whether we like it, whether we feel like we're prepared for it, whether the version of our future is the one that we wanted, it's coming and it will find you. The question is whether or not your future is going to come. It will come. The question is, in fact, will you be satisfied when the version of the future that you have in front of you, when it catches up to you, will you be happy? Will you be fulfilled? Will you go, thank God for his faithfulness in my past to bring me to this future? Or will you say, I wish I should have done differently. You see, I want to talk about the fact that God is faithful. What that means is that when we sow good seed in faith, when we make wise and prudent and godly decisions in our current season, in our today, and we put those things in the ground and we say, God, even though there's other ways and other options, even though I've got different opinions to you, I'm trusting your word when it says, don't do this or do this. And as I sow these seeds, what God's faithfulness means is that when the appointed time comes, and it's appointed because he has set that time, that there will be a harvest. In fact, the Apostle Paul said it like this in Galatians, God can't be mocked. A person will sow what they reap. You can't sow a certain type of seed and reap a different kind of plant. You sow apple seeds, you're going to get apple trees. And so even though we may be in a drought season, both physically and perhaps even spiritually, even though we may not be able to water the plants and see the harvest, we can sow some seeds. And I want to cause you to think about the idea or the fact that, you know, I want to challenge you to kind of question, rest the fact, what kind of seeds am I sowing today in expectation for an outcome tomorrow? Because here's what I see often as a pastor, as a leader. I meet Christ followers all the time, and it breaks my heart to meet people who have, their future has caught up to them, or their future has found them, but it was not the future that they dreamed of. It was not the future that they believed God for when they were a teenager, or when they were in Bible school, or when they were serving in church. It wasn't the reality that they had hoped for in difficult times. You see, sometimes the future that we find is not the future that we actually desire. Sometimes when our future catches up to us, and again, it can be difficult, can't it? When you have to, especially as you get older, as you begin to realize that your choices have consequences. And even though God is merciful, even though God is graceful, you still have to live with those consequences. And sometimes we make some poor choices and poor decisions. I'm not saying that, I'm not here to condemn you or say you're a bad person. We all do. We all do. But the question is, am I sowing enough good seed with the mistake seed and with the failure seed and with the utter seed, the humanity seed, so that when my future comes, I can say this is what I believe for. You see, to me, life is less like a maze. You guys know garden mazes, right? I mean, garden mazes are all over Europe. Garden mazes were built by people with too much time and too much money. And generally, the English are responsible for that, because any bad ideas on planet Earth, we associate to the English. So there you go. So if you're English, please do be offended, because that is the intention. But anyway, these garden mazes are all over the place. You go to a big home, a big house, a big estate, and you'll find these garden mazes. And what's interesting is that most of us, we think of life like a garden maze. You go into the door, and there's multiple choice, and you go left, you go right. And if you're not really, really bad with direction, you eventually, through trial and error, will discover the center. You'll get to the point, you'll reach the goal. And some of us have adopted, because the media and Hollywood and all these different outlets have led us to believe that life is like this. Oh yeah, if you take the wrong turn, it's okay. Experiment, go down that journey. The worst that will happen is you hit a cul-de-sac and realize this is not who I wanted to be, and turn around and just go back. And so we kind of think that once I just keep moving and keep trying, keep experimenting, and if I, you know, if I keep, you know, going on the wrong road, ultimately I will get there in the end. Unfortunately, being a pastor and working with real people in real life, that's not what happens. Very often, when people take a wrong turn on a wrong path, it costs them something great. In fact, I believe that we have an enemy who's out to get us, out to destroy our souls, and he plays a game of exchange, that when we choose to play with fire, when we choose to go down that path, whether it be a relationship or an addiction, or just, you know, kind of digress from God's plan for our lives, normally what it means, what it takes for us to turn around, is we have to leave a piece of ourselves there. We forfeit a piece of ourselves, whether it be our purity or our peace, or whether it be God's best plan for lives. When we play those games, we leave a piece of ourselves there. And most people that I meet in life aren't in fact on their way from a cul-de-sac making great progress. They're stuck in the mud and they're struggling. And maybe you're here today and that's exactly where you are. You're stuck in the mud and you're struggling. See, life is less like a maze. Life to me is more like climbing a mountain. Because there's a peak, there's a goal. You guys have some amazing mountains here in South Africa. But there isn't any one set way to get to the top. You just got to get to the top. Recently, I was reminded of this when my dad rang me up about 2 years ago and said, hey, let's do a father-son thing. And I said, sure, what do you got in mind? Let's climb a mountain. And I'm like, okay. You got to understand, my dad is ex-military, so that's how he bonds. We shoot stuff and we climb mountains. And so I said, let's do it. Now, what he didn't tell me was the mountain we were climbing wasn't in Ireland. It actually was in Wales. And it wasn't just any mountain. It was the SAS selection course mountain. And he had signed me up for a real life experience of, there's me with the beard, by the way, like that. Always changing because Interpol are constantly trying to catch up with me. And so I got to keep changing. So this is my dad, the identical twin brother. And so we decided to climb this mountain. And this is a 24 kilometer speed march tab over the mountain and back with 100 pounds on your back, which is quite challenging. And of course, my logic was, well, if the owl fella can do it, well, I can do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, look at him. He's so old. And so off I went. To my shock and horror, I think it was about 5 minutes into the march, I thought this was a big mistake. And literally, there are people, grown men and women, who would stop and break down in tears on this thing. It was grueling. It was horrific. But what it taught me was, at the end of the day, there's no set way and there's no set methodology or there's no one way of doing things. Ultimately, what it takes is this, that you're going to fall and you're going to fail, but you got to get up to get to the top. Yeah. And even though it may require effort, and even though it may require pain, even though it may require, you know, work, ultimately, if we're going to achieve the things that we believe that God has put on and in our lives, then we have to work for them. We have to forge a way. We have to make a way. We have to make our own way. Especially those of you who are here and you're younger, maybe some of the guys from the band. The way before you may not be clear because God has called you to make that way. And maybe there's others coming behind you, your siblings, your friends in school, maybe some people even here in church and kids' church. And you have to forge a way for them because maybe there isn't many great examples what it means to be a young person who loves the Lord and is passionately sold out for him. But maybe God has called you to be the first of many who forge that way. See, the English word forge literally means to create something that is strong, enduring, and successful. When I talk to you about forging your future, what I'm talking to you is about the idea that we have to create something that is strong, enduring, and successful. I believe for your marriage, for your family, for your career, for this church, that God's will, that God's plan, that God's future for you is one that is strong, enduring, and successful. The best things in life, the most important things in life, the things that make a difference in life are things that aren't just found, they're things that have to be forged. Great inventors, great minds, great thinkers, great revolutionary leaders all understand the power and the price of forging. Thomas Edison, you know him, he's famous. He said that opportunity is missed by most people because it's dressed in overalls and looks like work. He's known not for what he invented per se, but for how many failures that he underwent in order to succeed. He literally forged a way forward for technology in our world. You know him because he invented the light bulb. And we wouldn't be in this room right now without windows without his forging. Did you also know that he invented the phonograph? Which if you like iTunes or Spotify or listen to music on any device, he invented that. Not only that, you probably don't know this, he also invented motion picture. So movies, This projector screen, you know, films we call them, he was the forefather of three of the most important parts of our world. Yet he failed, I think, something like 100,000 times or something in his attempts to create those things. See, why we don't have more inventors like Thomas Edison is because people are afraid to fail. They're afraid to take risks. And maybe you're here today and you're thinking, you've come to church, and maybe you're not yet a Christ follower, and you're wondering, is all this stuff real? And you know, you're in your heart, you want to trust in Jesus, you want to go for God, but you're afraid. What if this is all a lot of nonsense? Can I say it's okay to think that? Because every one of us in this room at one point thought what you think now. This is all a load of nonsense. Because it doesn't make sense until you experience Jesus. And he changes everything. See, we're afraid because all of us have an inbuilt avoidance system when it comes to pain. We don't like pain. Let's just be honest. We avoid pain. We don't like pain. Pain creates discomfort, and we're creatures of comfort, so we avoid pain. And the enemy knows this. And so he leverages that fear. He leverages that apprehension. He leverages, you know, the power of fear in our lives to stop us from walking out the journey that God has called us to walk out with Jesus. Literally, fear has this profound effect because fear paralyzes us. Fear, particularly comes to our future, fear of tomorrow, fear of God's best not being good enough will literally paralyze us into, rather than taking action and taking steps to create a future, it will make us stop, stand still, and become a victim of our future. I gotta tell you, View Church, that if you're going to be all that God's called you, you can't afford to be a victim of your future. There are things in this community, there are things in this nation, there are things on this continent that God has called you to contend for, to fight for, to forge a way. The enemy will use fear. Whenever an opportunity comes to, maybe God is stirring your heart to give generously. Or maybe God is causing you to think about perhaps serving. Maybe God has called you to do something bold and extraordinary. And as soon as you think that the enemy's voice comes in and says, hey, that's a bad idea. Because if you give that, you won't be able to buy that. And if you serve here, you won't be able to go there. And if you commit to this, you can't do the other. And so we get paralyzed. And what we end up becoming is Christians who attend church rather than be the church. We come to feel good. We lift our hands in worship. We take off the box and I'm a Christian. God never calls you to attend an event. He calls you part of a radical community that globally is changing the world. You see, fear paralyzes us into waiting to find our future. But the reason why faith is so important, we've already heard today, as Pastor Jason said, with prayer requests and praise reports and the next couple of weeks in Life for Church, the reason why faith is so important is because faith has a provocative effect in our lives. Faith reminds us that God still is, and God still can, and God will. Faith has this amazing ability that when we're tired, or when we're struggling, or when we're down, or when we feel defeated, that we can rise again. Because if God is with us, who can be against us? See, faith provokes us into working to forge our future. Faith reminds us, on the other side of the battle, on the other side of the mountain, on the other side of the giant, is a victory, is a place, is a promise that is worth fighting for. To me, a great example of this is a Bible character. You probably know of him. His name is Caleb. And Caleb isn't perhaps one of the most obvious or most well-known of Old Testament biblical leaders. But to me, when it comes to tenacity, and when it comes to, you know, perseverance, when it comes to working and being faithful to God for a promise tomorrow, I think he's the best example of this. If you look at the book of Joshua chapter 14, I just want to read a couple of verses and kind of pick out some things from Caleb's life that could really inspire and challenge us when it comes to forging our future. You'll see that, you know, Caleb's at a key point in his life. In verse 6, he's kind of gotten on in years, to use a want of a better expression. And Israel, the people of God, you know the story. Basically, Moses, God calls Moses in Egypt. He kind of leads God's people, the Israelites, out of Egypt through the Red Sea into the to the desert, first of all, in preparation for the promised land. We're actually told in the Old Testament that God intended to take his people through the desert for 2 years. God understood that these people weren't ready. They didn't have the necessary character or necessary strength of faith to be able to take hold of the promise. And so God purposely detoured them for 2 years in order to prepare them for the promise. Maybe that's you today. Maybe you're here thinking, why isn't God doing this like yesterday? Sometimes God loves us too much to give us what we ask for. And even though it is promised, and even though it is coming right now, we don't have the necessary character or depth of integrity to be able to lay hold of that promise. It will destroy us. And so sometimes God orchestrates lovingly little detours. I call it the scenic route through life. Because sometimes the best experiences of life happen on the scenic route. For example, there's no wineries on the highway. You want to go to a wine farm and enjoy some nice wine? Do you guys drink wine here? Is that legal? No? Some more than others? Is it dangerous? Just got to be careful. Don't overstep any boundaries here. In Ireland, we're thirsty. I'll just say that. And sometimes the best parts of life are actually in the scenic route. And God takes us on these scenic routes, and we must understand that we shouldn't grow frustrated or lose heart. Because the reason why he's doing that is because he's building the character and the integrity and the experience and the ability so that when the promise comes, we have the ability to lay hold of it. Maybe you're here and you're thinking about marriage, or you're thinking about having kids, or you're thinking about a ministry position, you're wondering, you're frustrated, why isn't it happening this way? Why isn't it happening quicker? Why aren't I getting what I want? I want to encourage you. It's not because God isn't able or God doesn't want to necessarily, it's because God loves you and he wants the best for you, but he wants you to have the necessary strength to be able to lay hold of his best. And so the story goes, you know, God intended them to be in the desert for 2 years, but a critical thing happened where, at a very important point in the story, these spies are sent out and they came back at a report that ultimately challenged God. They kind of said, listen, we know God is great. We know God took us out of Egypt. We know God literally brought us to the Red Sea, but God cannot deliver us into this promised land. And so what should have taken 2 years ended up taking 40 years. Because one generation didn't have enough faith, listen carefully, to forge the future that was promised. And so God had to wait for an entire generation to die with hope that in the young people, they would rise up with faith. God intended to be 2 years, ended up being 40. And the story goes that basically the event that caused this was Moses sent out 12 spies to the promised land, 10 guys that we don't know of, and the other two were Joshua and Caleb. And 10 brought back one report, and the other two brought back a conflicting report. And at this point in the story, Caleb is reminding Joshua of that day. He's reminding Joshua of his perspective on the promise and what God, in response, had promised him. So in verse 6, here's Caleb speaking to Joshua. He says, now the people of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenite, said to him, you know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea about you and me. I was how old? 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land. And I brought him back a report according to my opinions, observations, thoughts. What's the word?
Convictions.
See, all 12 saw the same problems. There were tall Springbok men who were dark and ugly. Dangerous boys, big boys. And there were fortified cities. There were walls, and defensive mechanisms. And there was mountains. Like, this was not an easy task. All 12 saw the same problems. 10 said we can't, 2 said we can. The key is that Caleb wasn't operating off of what he saw or what he felt, but who he believed in. Caleb was a man of conviction. And why is conviction important if we're going to lay hold of God's future? Because conviction gives us confidence. See, look what it says in Numbers chapter 13, verse 30. It says that when the conversation was happening, this is like we get to see the moment of the conversation. It says, Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and we should take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. I mean, was this guy mental? Was he crazy? Was he blind? These guys are big boys. This is not an easy task. And we're these little guys, these are big guys, and we're going up there with our donkeys and our sandals, and they've got walls and defensive mechanisms. We don't stand a chance. But Caleb wasn't a man of opinion or logic or necessarily relying on his feeling. He was a man that understood, yes, logic's important and thinking's important and, you know, calculating and being good stewards. All those things are important, but nothing can ever replace faith when it comes to being obedient to God's call in your life. It doesn't make sense why I got married at 18. It doesn't make sense why I took over a church at 20. It doesn't have to make sense. Here's what you need to know. God said, Jamie, go do it, and I did it. And many, many years later, God's faithfulness and God's promise to my life are a reality because I sowed some seed yesterday, I reap a harvest today. God is requiring of you to trust him in sowing some seeds. You think that God's going to bless the relationship you're in because you think God's going to bless the relationship you're in. God has said no. God has called you to a higher way, a higher purpose. God maybe has called you to wait. And you think, well, if I sow this seed and I just do all this, I will manufacture the harvest that I want. You won't. You will end up eating the bitter fruit of regret. Hey, if God is big enough and worried enough of your fate for tomorrow, then that should mean that he is worried enough of your obedience today. Yeah. See, what we need to be as Christ followers are people of conviction. Our world isn't looking for a church that's right about everything. The world isn't looking for a perfect church, a well-polished church, a shiny plastic church. The world's looking for people with conviction. People who say, you know what, not that I have all the answers or that I'm perfect because I'm not, but man, God has changed my life. And here's what I can testify to. He is good. He's good. He's good. Even when people are bad, they're bad, they're bad. He is good. And we can trust him. And we can rest in his promise. Because even though right now it may seem like it's going to take a long while, he is faithful. The story continues in verse 8. It says that, but my fellow Israelites who went up there, they made the hearts of the people melt in fear. I, however, followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. So on that day, Moses swore to me, the land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance and that of your children forever because you follow the Lord my God wholeheartedly. What a crazy promise. I mean, Caleb, I imagine, is defeated. He's deflated. These 10 guys have swayed public opinion. These 10 guys in their fear, their lack of conviction, has caused everyone else to feel the same. And where he was ready to go lay hold of the promised land, the idea now, the plan is we're not going to do that. Yet in that, even though the opinion of the crowd was swayed to where they weren't going to obey God and take all the promise, God still was faithful to him and said, hey, where you set your feet, that will be one day your inheritance. What's interesting is that word wholeheartedly. See, when I first read this text a while back, it really caught my attention. What was it about Caleb's heart that was different from the heart of the other 10? Why was it the other 10 seeing the same giants and the same cities and the same mountains? What was it about their heart that caused their heart to melt with fear, yet Caleb seeing the same things, his heart didn't? In Numbers 14:24, God says this about Caleb. God says, because my servant Caleb had a different spirit. He had a different spirit. What was different about Caleb's spirit? What was different, the defining marker of Caleb's spirit was that he was a man who followed God, look at the word, wholeheartedly. Because he had this different spirit that was characterized by a wholehearted obedience and followership, I will bring him into the land of promise. Because he's a different spirit to the other guys, he will see the promise where they won't. And what was different about spirit? He served the Lord wholeheartedly. The kind of imagery in the Hebrew language which this book is written in is one of taking a kind of a jug of water and taking another jug that's empty and pouring all of the contents of one jug into the other. Essentially, culturally speaking, it's when someone, you're drinking a bottle of water and you're thirsty and someone says, can I have some? And you're going to pour some into their cup and you pour how much? A little bit, right? Maybe a quarter. If you're very generous, maybe half. But generally, when it comes to sharing, we're quite happy to give people a little but not too much. Because we have this fear, again, that if I give them this, I will be without. And why should they, who are they, or why are they more important than me? Why do they deserve more than I have? So I'll share a little bit of what I have, but I'm not going to put myself out and sacrifice and suffer at their expense. What's interesting is the word wholehearted literally has the image of a person pouring all of what they have into all of what the other person has not. Or simply put, in the context of God, Caleb was a man who poured all of who he was into all of who God is. You see, when it came to his following God, when it came to his faith, he wasn't the person who said, right, I'm willing to come to church and I'll attend services and I may be even part of a small group, but don't ask me to give. And don't ask me to serve. And don't ask me something crazy like go on a missions trip. Because I'll do my little bit, but I have other things going. I have other options going. I have backup plans and I have margin. So if this thing doesn't work, I'll be okay. And what that creates is that it creates a community of followers who half-heartedly serve the Lord. See, I think that the other 10 guys, they weren't non-believers per se. I just think they follow the Lord half-heartedly. I mean, they went to the promised land. That took courage to go and spy out a land that could have cost them their lives. But when it came down to crunch time, they didn't have what it took to trust God for the promise. Whereas the reason why Caleb's heart didn't melt with fear was because even though he saw the same giants in the same cities and the same mountains, all of who he was invested in who God is. God is good. God is able. God can and God will. Do I understand God or his timing? Absolutely not. Do I get frustrated with God all the time? Is this Christian life a struggle? Yes. Even for a pastor? Absolutely for a pastor. More so for a pastor. You know why? Because you got to deal with your problems. Your pastor deals with all of your problems. Sometimes you are the problem. Just saying. No, this church is perfect, right? I mean, you guys... I've heard so many great stories about your church and your pastors love you guys so much. And they are here for you. I mean, they have sown their lives into you. They don't have a backup plan. There isn't a jet on the runway. There isn't an island in the Caymans. There isn't a second job elsewhere. They have sown their dreams, their hopes, their kids, their very lives into you. Crazy, right? Because you know you. You wouldn't sow yourself into you. What causes people to do this? Conviction. Conviction. Because when you're sowed into God, when all of who you are is poured into all of who God is, what matters to God matters to you. And listen carefully. There is one thing in this world that God is busy with. There is one thing that he cares about. There is one thing that he is sowing himself in. That is his church. His church. His body, his family. And we too, like that, we need to take on board that when we talk about opportunities to invite friends, to invest and invite and to, you know, to serve and to give, it's not just going through the motions. We don't need half-hearted followers. The church isn't served by people who think, oh, they're desperate, I'll give a hand. The church is served by people who say, I have a relationship with God. I've experienced his grace and his power and his presence. And he has called me to an incredible, extraordinary future. And so no amount of giving or going or serving can he ask. It's beyond or above rationalization. Why? Because he is everything to me. And so when it came to, hey, Caleb, will you go into the promised land and fight these giants? Absolutely. Why? Because God is able. Because all of who I am is poured into all of who God is. And so the story continues in verse 10. Now then, Caleb says to Joshua, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years. How old was he when the promise came? 40 plus 45 equals 90. Yes, you're right. Just checking. He's 85 years old, guys. 85. And look at verse 11. And here's what he says to Joshua. And I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. He said to Joshua, hey, don't be fooled by my inability to walk like I used to. You know what I'm saying? I'm a bit older, I'm a little bit mature, but I'm just as ready now as I was then. Not only am I as ready, I feel like I'm just as strong now as I was then. Like, imagine as he handed this walking stick to one of his assistants. I'm just as strong now as I was then. Now, here's the thing. I don't believe that's true. I don't believe Caleb was as strong at 85 as he was when he was 40. I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that he believed he was. That 85, he was saying, hey, if God can create the stars, if he can create the world, if God can raise the dead, if God can promise Abraham a child, if God can deliver Moses and Elijah to the Red Sea, God has the strength, power, and ability to use an 85-year-old man to take hold of the promise. And so it wasn't that he had the natural ability. It wasn't that he had the vigor or the strength of a 40-year-old man. He had the faith of a man of conviction. So in context, Joshua and his generals, they're all arguing about the best strategy to take all the valleys. They're thinking, we'll knock off some of the cities in the valleys first because they're the easy ones, right? I mean, all these young bucks, all these young upstarts, they're all like talking about, oh, I'll take Ai and we'll take this and we'll take that. And Caleb butts in and he says, hey guys, listen to me. If you can keep squabbling about the valley, give me the hill country. If you're intimidated by the mountain men, if you're intimidated by the cities, if you're intimidated by those peaks, give them to me. Because my strength and my faith and my conviction isn't built or based on who I am or who's with me or what resource I have in front of me, but in who God is. And as far as I'm concerned, I will drive them out because he said I would. He said I would. See, too often I think as Christians, we try to live out God's plan for our lives in our own strength or our own resource. And we don't get the results that we desire, the results that we believe for. And it breaks our heart and it steals of our confidence, robs us of our joy. And we quit. When in actual fact, listen carefully to me, the future that God has for you is not something that you can produce your own strength. God has a promise. We can take some steps. But ultimately, it's because he has promised that it shall become a reality. You see, Caleb understood something about promise and about giants, and that is this, particularly for those who are here, parents or a little bit older, that if we don't fight the giants of our time, of our generation, if we don't take hold of the promise, our kids will have to. I don't want my kids to fight my giants. I don't want my kids to live in the shadow of my failure and stand up for God against things that I should have paved the way for them. Caleb wasn't going to be robbed of his opportunity to take hold of his promise. He understood that our future and your future and my future and this church's future is not something that we just stumble upon one day by accident and find it. It isn't something that we're going to be victims of. The incredible God-given extraordinary future for your life and for this church is something that has to be forged by faith, has to be created, has to be worked on. It has to be, we have to apply ourselves to, we have to take some steps, we have to invest ourselves if we're going to see it become a reality. The story concludes in this, in verse 13, that Joshua blessed Caleb, he gave him Hebron as his inheritance, and today we talk about a story, and today his sons took hold of those cities. Why? Because he was a man of conviction who poured all of who he was into all of who God is and took hold of the promise. Listen carefully to me. You've got a choice today. I have a choice today. We have a choice. Our lives can go down in history like the 10 guys who served the Lord half-heartedly, or every one of us, regardless of male or female, we can be like a Caleb in our generation. It doesn't matter how old you are, how qualified you are, how unqualified you are, where you've come from. It doesn't matter how you life will try to make you a victim. Life will try to make you a victim. You refuse to be a victim and choose to be a victor in faith. That with God's help, by his spirit, his strength, by his presence, I believe every promise for your life will come to pass. I believe you will defeat your giants. I believe you will conquer cities. I believe that you will take mountains. And I believe that your kids, spiritual and physical, will be released into their legacy because their parents, their forefathers, paved the way for them. Amen. I want to just close off with a few practical thoughts. I want to pray. Maybe you're here today and you think, that sounds really great, Jamie, but I'm still struggling with this whole God thing. I'm not really sure I can trust him like that. I mean, I've been attending service or I've been coming to church for a while and have some friends here, but I'm not sure. I want to encourage you that if there's one thing we can see from Caleb's legacy, it's this. It's never too soon to put God first in everything. If you ask me, what is the one thing that I did right in life except marrying my wife? Because that was definitely very smart. It's when I was 16, I made a choice to put God first in everything. It was foolish, reckless. My friends thought I was crazy. I was crazy. But I just knew that this God, who I've heard talked about, is as he said he is. That he is worthy of my everything. And I've screwed up gloriously, epically in my life. But it's one thing I don't regret. I don't know anyone else that regrets this. It's putting God first in everything. I want to challenge you. Is God first in your life? Have you poured all of who you are into all of who he is? Because the future that awaits you, the future that you dream, the future that you're praying for, the future that you're contending for, it's not something you can make or manufacture by yourself. It's something that you got to work for in partnership with God. And the best thing you can do, the smartest thing you can do, isn't to open an investment portfolio or choose a certain university or move to a certain country for better economic opportunity. It's to put yourself, all of yourself, in God's hands and trust him for everything. God can do it here just as much as you can do it anywhere else. Second thing we see from Caleb's legacy is this: it's never too late for God to fulfill anything. Maybe you've been on this journey, man, that feels like you've been wandering for 40 years. It's okay. In the end, here's what I trust for you. God will prove himself faithful. Maybe it's a son or daughter who right now isn't walking with the Lord. Maybe it's a business you're trying to get off the ground and you keep trying and it fails and tries and it fails. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a ministry or a mission. I don't know what it is you're believing for, but I do know this. It's never too late for God to fulfill any promise. As long as there's breath in your lungs and you have a tomorrow, there is opportunity for God to do outstanding things. Here's the question. When the harvest comes, will you still be standing? Don't quit, man. Keep fighting. Keep believing. Keep standing. Even though it may feel like a whole generation passes away, as long as you are standing, you will see the promise of God fulfilled in your life. It's never too late for God to fulfill a promise. And third and finally, I love this one. You're never too old to take a new mountain. Hey, some of you more mature brothers and sisters in the room, you are not done. You do not have permission to retire from ministry. You will have permission to retire from ministry when you're dead. And you can rest for a long time. But if you're in this room and you're still breathing, that tells me God is not done with you yet. And you may say, but you don't know my story. If you know my mistakes and what I did wrong, I don't care what you've done wrong. Jesus' blood has covered it once and for all. It is, you are a new creation. And I believe for some of you today, for all of you who are in that generation who would apply yourselves to serve the Lord wholeheartedly, your best days, your greatest victory, and your most challenging mountains are yet to be conquered. God is not. This church needs you. This church needs your wisdom. It needs your experience. It needs your scars. It needs your wisdom. It needs you. You're not a spectator in this thing. God's got a plan for you. Don't quit. Maybe today as you go home, ask God, what is the next mountain? What is the next big thing? And I trust for you also that the best days of God are yet ahead for you. And I speak over you. I speak over this church. I speak over this city. I speak over this nation. That the best days for View Church, for Cape Town, for South Africa are yet ahead. And I'm believing for a community of men and women of conviction who will pour all of who they are into all of who God is and will go and lay hold of the extraordinary, powerful, beautiful, incredible future that God has in store for you.